Welcome back, ladies and gents, to the All In Crypto podcast. Today, I have a rather special interview lined up for you. I have Alessandro from Acarast, a network that is essentially taking on the cloud lords that reign over us. And let me break down a little bit in regards to what I mean by the cloud lords. Well, what I mean is the people that essentially have the lion's share and a total monopoly on cloud computing, computing resources. And what Acarast essentially is doing is they are empowering individuals to compute to a global decentralized serverless cloud through a mobile phone device to essentially pull all that computing resource together and actually be able to perhaps compete against or offer certainly a better, in many cases, alternative to the current infrastructure that runs the internet. Now, this is important. That we decentralize Web 2, but it's also very important that we decentralize Web 3. And we're going to be getting into all that in this interview. So I really do hope you guys enjoy watching this interview as much as I enjoyed conducting it. Without further ado, let's head over to the interview and take a look at what we spoke about. So today we are lucky enough to have Alessandro from Acarast Network in front of us. The first thing for me to do is ask you how you're doing, Alessandro.
Yeah, very well. Thank you. And thank you for having me. I'm super excited about this interview, yes.
Yeah, the pleasure is all mine. This is a personal interest of mine, this kind of idea of deep in decentralized physical infrastructure, which I'm sure we're going to get into. And we're going to get into how Acarast is actually facilitating that. We're also going to really touch on the kind of realms of centralized versus decentralized, why it's important, and everything in between. But the first thing really for me to ask you is I think it's important to understand where a project's going to understand where it's came from. And I really want to start and get straight into it with the kind of initial ideas behind Acarast and how you guys started out.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. What I learned throughout my career is that it's always important to start with a demand before you just scope out a huge vision and so on and so forth. And the demand case in the specific context of Acarast was that a Deepin project reached out. And basically they reached out with the question, is there a way to basically bring off-chain data on-chain in a verifiable way? And now my background is in mobile security. We help some of the largest corporations worldwide to secure their infrastructure and basically bring mobile devices into their legacy systems and so on and so forth. And I knew that the most secure hardware security modules that someone can actually purchase in bulk lies in mobile devices. So what we ended up doing was basically leveraging the hardware security module and the trusted execution environment in there to provide a verifiable compute to observe and then bring on-chain data for this DeFi project. So it's the classical Oracle use case. But we soon then also realized that while Oracles are super fun and super interesting problem to solve, what was way more exciting for me was actually the idea of being able to utilize this very same verifiable compute for a decentralized compute solution. And the reason why, and then I'll just stop there before I go on with a huge monologue, but the reason why is that mobile devices have always been part of what I'm doing like professionally. And mobile devices are just awesome. They're a complete underutilized resource. And I realized that these devices have some of the most advanced silicon out there. And if you're able to just upcycle, maybe even use devices or spare phones for that compute, that makes them kind of the perfect candidate for a decentralized compute network because it can scale beyond anything else.
It's very interesting, isn't it? I mean, it's very handy that basically everyone has a mobile phone. People have mobile phones before they have bank accounts, passports, any of that kind of stuff. You know, everyone kind of has a mobile phone, which I guess makes them very accessible, which is perfect for what Acarast are trying to do. And it's interesting that you mentioned your first kind of or one of the ventures or directions Akaras originally started out with was basically being an oracle. So we all know about Chainlink and things like this. And actually, Chainlink back in 2018 really opened my mind up to the possibilities of distributed ledgers beyond finance specifically. And actually how Satoshi solved a number of problems. One was sort of, how do you do it? And the other one was, how do you incentivize people to do it? And kind of combining that, you've got the blueprint that can't just be and isn't just now applied to money or a decentralized kind of banking system. It's now applied to a kind of serverless cloud, a decentralized serverless cloud, like what you guys are trying to do through harnessing sort of mobile phone hardware, which is really, really interesting. So what I want to kind of do now is dive into how Akaras actually works. So if we can sort of, before we do that, set the stage in regards to exactly what Akaras is in as layman terms as possible, because not everybody sort of understands this concept of cloud computing. Let's maybe venture there and then talk about the specifics in regards to how it works.
Yeah, absolutely. So you have, cloud computing is everywhere, right? From all the social media platforms that you consume, they require some compute to basically any server and service that you utilize throughout your personal life and also your professional life. And the problem is that a lot of that compute is centralized with a handful of big companies, right? These are the Googles, Amazon, Microsoft of this world, and then maybe also a couple of others. But if you take just these three, for example, you're covering more than 66% of all the compute worldwide. And what Akaras does is completely decentralizing this with an ethos similar to open source for software, that you as a user are able to contribute and provide this to other users. So by users, for users. And we did not want to just provide that in a very exotic way so that only people that would want to really invest a lot of time in understanding how Akaras works could then use that. But we wanted to provide this in a way how they're used to use the compute. And that's why Akaras applies a serverless model. This is similar to an offering that Amazon calls AWS Lambda, Google calls Google Cloud Functions, and Azure calls them also Azure Functions. And the idea is it's a very cloud native architecture where basically you have some sort of events coming in. So someone trying to consume a website is an event, but you can also have all sorts of other triggers like a blockchain transaction coming in or an interval even. And based on that event, you then trigger your logic behind it. So the logic can be, I don't know, resizing, rescaling some images. But not only that, you can basically do everything like serving your actual application. And this is what Akaras offers you. There is an abstraction that brings together whoever is providing the compute. We call them the processors. And then whoever is consuming that compute, we call them the developers, basically. And both parties meet on this decentralized protocol. It's a proof of stake chain that has a distributed ledger for exactly this matchmaking. So someone will advertise, hey, I have 8 cores, 8 gigabytes of RAM. And then the other party will say, okay, I require someone that runs my Node.js application. This Node.js application requires 8 cores, 8 gigabytes of RAM. And I'm willing to pay X. And if they agree on a price, well, they will get matched. And then the application is then hosted for how long it then was specified to start with.
It's very interesting. You know, somebody once compared this idea that you've got to the kind of energy market, because the energy market, even though you have these big players like EDF, in regards to where the energy comes from, it's quite decentralized. So these players like EDF, what they do and I'm sure many of you already know this, is they go and they get energy from lots of different places and they kind of act almost as a marketplace. And I think if we look at the world that we're moving towards, it's going to be an ever increasingly digital one. I think the energy now consumption for, and we can talk about energy consumption because actually decentralization can reduce that energy consumption as well as cost and all these other things. But it's very comparable, I think, to the kind of energy market, but in a more decentralized manner, because the world we're moving towards, compute is going to be like the oil of tomorrow. I really, truly do believe that. And the way that you guys are doing it, I think, is genius. So let's go a little bit more layman's terms in regards to all that. Akarast, how are they actually providing the compute? Does that come from mobile phones, for example? Is that the main target audience here, like we had mentioned at the start? And then once you have that, it's just a case of matchmaking those capabilities with people that want to use and utilize them.
Yeah. So if you want to compete against these very centralized and highly efficient companies like Google, Amazon, and Microsoft, the problem that we saw is that you cannot simply play by the same rules, right? Because, I mean, you can be naive and hope to be somewhat competitive, but the reality of things is that they have the better relationship with the hardware suppliers than you do. They also do have the better economies of scale than you do. And you're just, yeah, basically left with the overhead of decentralization. And that's why the mobile device actually plays a very big role with Akarast, and also is a very interesting resource, and I believe is the key to success here. Because the mobile device actually, not many people know that, but the silicon in mobile devices is some of the most advanced silicon out there that you can purchase. And the reason is that they never had the privilege of being plugged in 24/7. They needed to be optimized for energy consumption and being able to still provide a lot of compute and performance for games, for video editing, for you name it. And that's why the silicon in there is very, very valuable. And the other aspect is that there is a huge market of trade-in phones and secondary market of phones where you can purchase this compute for very, very cheap, especially if the device has some sort of malfunctioning, as in the screen is cracked, maybe the microphone is not there. Like, Akarast does not really care. You can turn that very, kind of malfunctioning device into an Akarast processor as long as the compute is intact. And it takes really a lot before you even manage to break that, right? And this means that now, if we take a look at the network today, thousands of devices have already been upcycled and entirely just dedicated to the network as compute units. It takes about 3 minutes for someone to onboard. It's a very, very easy process. You don't need to be a Linux geek or a system admin that knows about server stuff. If you're able to handle a mobile device, then you will be able to also onboard as an Akarast processor. And the system afterwards is all managed by a web interface that we call the console. So basically, you set up your device on the console. It takes 3 minutes. You don't need to flash ROMs or do any sorts of trickery around that. After you've set up the device, you manage everything with the console. On the other hand, the device will advertise itself and its computational resources that it has, so that someone else can then come and submit deployments that will get eventually matched with your mobile device.
Wow, fascinating. I've got so many questions that I want to ask you. I think a really good one to start, because many people that are watching this are going to want to take part in what you guys are doing. I mean, I probably have 3 or 4 mobile phones in my drawer that may not ever see the light of day. And I think actually, you mentioned the word kind of upscaling or recycling these devices. Because those devices, many people will throw those devices out. it's kind of a form of recycling what you guys are doing as well, which has huge ramifications for the planet. I want to talk about the pros and cons of decentralized versus centralized in a second, and how actually energy efficiency is one of them, along with many others. One thing I've absolutely got to ask, because there's going to be lots of people that are going to be curious, are there any kind of privacy issues for somebody that may want to join the network with a mobile phone that they may incur doing that, if that makes sense?
Security is at the core of whatever we do with Accurus, right? This is where we came from, the idea of being able to leverage the hardware security module of your mobile device to provide this verifiable compute. And security goes both ways, also for someone that is then specifying the deployments that they want. They want to make sure that you're not cheating them and just saying that you're running something even though you're not running something. But then, of course, also whoever is providing the compute wants to be secure and safe. Now, when you upcycle a device today, that device needs to be completely wiped. So there is, by design, no personal data on that device. Once you have done the whole provisioning process, the device will be fully dedicated to the network. You can no longer utilize it to watch YouTube or do some phone calls. But at any point in time, you can still say, okay, I need this device again. I will wipe it, and then it goes back to the factory reset state. And then from there on, you can do whatever you want with it, basically. But you never, the accurate application and this execution environment that you install on the device never has access in your personal apps or personal data whatsoever. And this is also true for a new form of application that we're about to launch, which is called Accurus Lite, which actually you're able to install on your personal device and your everyday device. It has not launched yet. We're very excited about it. And the thing there, however, is that it's not just an application that is installed side by side with your personal applications. It creates an entirely isolated, separate container where you have this work profile where only the Accurus application is in there then. And the idea there is that you are then in full control to choose when you want to provide the compute. So you can say, okay, throughout the day, I'm utilizing my phone, please don't drain my battery. But throughout the night, while I'm charging, just go ahead and utilize that compute. And that's one of the sneak peeks, if you want, of what is about to come out in the Accurus world.
Wow. So it really does seem like the downside here for actually joining the Accurus network is there is no downside, really. You know, you're getting rewarded for partaking in a network. And on a kind of more broader philosophical scale, what you're doing is also enabling a network that offers a decentralized alternative to these kind of centralized techno-feudalistic companies that exist that are deriving a hell of a lot of power as a result of their positioning in regards to the infrastructure that makes up the internet. I'm kind of tempted to stick a sign out on the front lawn saying broken phones wanted. You know, you can see, and I'm sure there are people out there that will collect a hoard of phones that they can connect, and you can do this just with an internet connection, I take it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you join the Telegram or Discord group of Accurus, you will see these amazing setups. There's literally people that have 300 phones.
Wow.
In a rack, nicely organized. Some of them are less nicely organized.
That would be my rack.
How it is, but it's always very inspiring for me to see as well how these people are helping each other with which Wi-Fi access points actually work better than others, which data plans work better than others. It's really a very thriving and growing community of people now organizing themselves around this topic. And that's probably one of the things that makes me brings me a lot of motivation and inspires. Yeah.
feels very similar to kind of the early days of Bitcoin, right? You know, yeah, you had people doing all kinds of things in regards to mining Bitcoin. I'm sure a lot of them wish they'd held on to it and not used it on the dark web or whatever else they did. But hey ho, you live and learn. It's such an interesting concept, this. And I think one of the things that I love as somebody that speaks with lots of projects that, you know, really is passionate about this industry is it's a perfect highlighting of how a distributed ledger can be used to do something, you know, world changing. And this is where I want to take this now. So we're going to leave links to the Telegram and the Discord in the description. If you're interested, guys, go ahead, get on board. There's no harm in asking or trying to find something out. I'm sure the people over on the Discord and Telegram won't mind. And we'll get into socials and everything towards the end of the video. But where I want to move to now is this kind of idea of decentralized versus centralized. And I want to start off on kind of a... I do want to explore the philosophically why we should choose decentralized over centralized and the power these centralized entities have over us. But before I do that, I want to talk about the benefits of something being decentralized over centralized. So things like cost, energy efficiency, privacy, these kind of things. I wonder if you could break down some of the kind of trade-offs and pros and cons of these decentralized cloud computing systems.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are aspects, economical aspects, that make it, of course, very, very interesting. I mean, we now have thousands of devices that people can choose to basically deploy their compute. And the cool thing about this is that we may be like the entire team around Accurist and also friends and family and whatnot, have about 30 devices. So that's 30, but there's thousands of devices out there. And one of the amazing things about decentralization and this kind of by users for users philosophy is that we did not have to come up with all those thousands of devices ourselves and onboard them ourselves. This means that there is a huge scaling effect behind it. And I truly believe that it has the potential, and this is also my ambition, to basically provide more computational power than any other data center out there. Wow. And I mean, just think about it. We have, I don't know, 10 billion people worldwide, and I don't know how many mobile devices out there. But if you are able to upcycle all of those devices, which of course is not realistic, but even, I don't know, just 10% of them, you will be blowing out of the water any and every data center offering out there, which is centralized. Because centralization does not scale to some extent by design, yep. Right? I think that's the beauty of having a system that organizes itself based on consensus rules and can kind of scale horizontally. I think that's one aspect. The other aspect is, and I touched only briefly on this, is that this superiority of the silicon in mobile devices also translate to a metric that is very, very relevant, which is the compute per watt. So the consumption is way lower for the same level of compute provided by these devices. This means that you will not have the downside of a huge electricity bill at the end of the month that you would have when providing compute with a server. That's another just economical aspect to this. And then, of course, there are a couple of more philosophical and more idealistic aspects of it. But one of the things that really excites me is that looking back at how software changed when people started to think about software in also a more and more open source way, if we're able to apply the same ethos to compute, then one can only imagine how this will impact compute as well. So I'm really excited about the idea of bringing open source ethos to compute and have people then organize themselves
around that. in an easy way as well. You know, it's not like your kind of Bitcoin miners, for example, great example. I always say that Bitcoin was kind of almost like the original deep in network, in the sense that if you look at what Bitcoin miners are, they're just a computational resource, right? There is software involved, or an algorithm involved, but you're not saying to people, you've got to go and buy these 10,000 pound rigs to maintain the network or to help run the network. You're saying, if you have an old mobile phone, it can have a cracked screen, the microphone can't work, you can now partake in this network. And through that network effect, we can essentially compete with, I say we, people on the Akrash network, which is everybody if they want to become that, with the likes of Google, Apple, Microsoft, you know, so on and so forth, Meta, or even if you look at all the largest companies in the world, they all have a hand in things like cloud computing at this point. And it's very logical to me that the things that are big in Web 2 are going to be even bigger in Web 3. And before we maybe dive a little bit more philosophically with some of the dangers you see with centralization, because I'd love your take on it, can we talk a bit about the ironic nature of Web 3 in some senses? And we might offend people a little bit, which is fine. I understand that, you know, we're not necessarily trying to please everybody, but there is an irony in the Web 3 space in the fact that we utilize Amazon in a lot of cases to run nodes, to store NFTs. We use Amazon and things like that. How big do you think this idea is for Web 3 and kind of maybe highlighting the contradictions that exist at the moment?
I think to be able to actually really live without any compromise a Web 3 philosophy, you need to some extent this kind of decentralized compute as a cornerstone. Because let's also just take the big DAOs out there. All of these DAOs today will need some sort of legal representation within a certain jurisdiction. Why? Because someone needs to host the front-end and indexing services that they require to provide the service, so that users don't need to set up their own front-end and so on and so forth, because of pure convenience, right? And what ends up happening is that these most of the time then land as well as front-ends hosted by either Amazon or Google or Microsoft to some extent. And the other thing is as well, we see with many protocols, Ethereum included, that actually the concentration in certain data centers of their nodes is kind of concerning as well, because if you have more than 33% of your nodes within one provider, it can be a problem. And the cool thing, or the nice thing about big tech, is that they're super happy to onboard you as a Web3 project. Problem that you're mentioning is definitely that many of these nodes actually are all running on centralized offering, not really living this philosophy of decentralization and Web3. And you have also all the people working at Amazon and Google that are actually starting with evangelism, specifically targeting all these Web3 conferences. Why? Because for them, it's a very, very good deal. These projects usually never take a look at the bandwidth that they're using. And bandwidth is actually very, very expensive for nodes, because they actually are very, very chatty when they have to synchronize it themselves. And the hope is that we are able to onboard them onto Akrash, because it's also very near, right? We kind of share the same philosophy of Web3 behind it. So that's one of the first target groups that we're actually now onboarding. However, the mobile devices are really great in terms of the compute that they provide, but they also have a certain set of properties where they are not so good at. And one of the things is that they usually come with a limited storage. And when you want to host nodes, Web3 nodes specifically, sometimes the requirements on storage is actually very, very big. But this is not necessarily a problem. We are already now in the talks and with a POC looking on how storage can actually be expanded by utilizing fast SSDs as external storage. And then there is really no limitation that wouldn't allow you to run a full node on Accurist.
Yeah, so I think we've highlighted one of the kind of use cases within the Web3 space there that you guys are going after. Let's talk about some more use cases for Accurist. So you've got this network. We also spoke, and I think it was really interesting before we get onto this, about this kind of idea that Accurist actually could compete with the sort of tech giants out there. Do you know, and I'm really going to be putting you on the spot here, do you know roughly how many mobile phones, is there a calculation we can do to figure out how many mobile phones it would take to kind of compete with some of these networks? Is there anything we can do there? Yeah. And we can try and kind of aim for that number, I guess.
So if all of the mobile devices would be active all of the time, we would need about 20 million mobile devices. Wow. To actually be larger than the largest data center offered by Amazon or Google or Microsoft. And while 20 million is a huge number, it is not an impossible number, because you and I know that mobile devices are out there. Everyone has one. So you don't need to convert that many people to actually onboard to achieve that number. The other side of the story, however, is putting that compute to work as well. So you need to scale kind of always both sides to be sustainable. And now Accurist had the great benefit that it actually started with the demand side, and then afterwards started to build up also the supply side. Now we've been very, very successful on scaling the supply side, but are already thinking about the next use cases to push on the demand side. The sort of compute that Accurist provides is a very, very secure execution environment that not even the operator of that hardware, so if you are a processor on Accurist, you're not able to tamper with the executions. You can, of course, at any time just kind of block the connection. So you can block liveliness, but you cannot impact the integrity of the execution, because we're getting that integrity out of the fact that there is a whole attestation system working and leveraging the hardware security module of that mobile device. And that's at the very core of things. So one of the properties that is very, very interesting, especially for Web3 use cases, and I'll just list a few there, is this security aspect. Another interesting aspect is how distributed it is, because already today we cover basically all of the continents except for Antarctica, and maybe I will go there personally.
I was going to say, is there not a marketing campaign or something we could do with getting someone on in Antarctica?
We should with a little Accurist rig go there. And maybe have people donate some of their phones and then see how many we can collect to bring to Antarctica. That would be actually a very, very nice gag. Yeah.
I'm on board with that. Yeah,
but the thing is, this distribution is very valuable, more than we think. And this can be very valuable for a couple of things, right? You know how like high frequency traders try to put their servers right next to the stock exchange server so that they are able to basically front run the market and make very, very small profits, but at a very, very large volume. You can create kind of autonomous agents. I will not use the AI buzzwords in this, because let's just call them agents, regardless of whether they use some sort of AI or not, with a preset set of rules, and then say, okay, I want this agent to be running in Australia, because in Australia, there is actually this cryptocurrency exchange that I want to monitor and I want to trade on. So that's another use case where you can actually then have your agents put even in the same ISP as some of the servers that you're trying to target. So that's one of the other very nice properties of Accurist. And the last one is that basically it's unstoppable, because once you have decided to launch your workloads and deploy your workloads on enough processors, there is literally nothing that will be able to stop that, because there is no centralized party that can just say, okay, no, I want to stop that execution specifically.
Yeah, so it kind of transcends anyone, government or jurisdiction globally. And if somebody sort of, for example, you've selected someone and that gets shut off for whatever reason, maybe the person who's connected to the network wants to unplug it, it will just go to the next one.
Absolutely. But one thing is really important to say here. The whole thing is 100% transparent. So you will always... Like the transparency is also what protects you. Similar to the fact that utilizing Bitcoin for laundering money is a horrible idea.
Yep.
The same thing applies also to Accurist, because it is 100% transparent on who is deploying which workload onto your compute units. And yeah, that is one of the things that is important to highlight. And I think it's also one of the cornerstones to be able to actually do this by user for users in a very transparent and secure way for everyone.
Yeah, I think I made a video about 5 years ago saying it was actually a really bad idea to be a drug dealer using Bitcoin. It just doesn't, you know, that's there forever. And when things get a little bit more capable of tracking things, and certainly as we move towards a world where perhaps digital identities become more and more of a thing, might not be such a good idea. But we can see sort of a lot of the benefits. We can see kind of how Accurist works. I think the concept for me is really, really powerful, because where this could get to, you know, 20 million phones, which I don't think is anywhere near out the realms of possibility, I mean, Accurist could become the largest kind of resource for compute that there is, period, in a decentralized manner, and kind of compete. The more interesting thing for me as well is the fact that we can actually compete with the sort of tech giants out there that have so much power as a result of it. Through the power of a distributed ledger, you can really sort of disband this and compete. And I think that's unbelievably powerful. What's the current state of Accurist right now? So what kind of capabilities has Accurist got? And also, are we in a stage now where anybody can go over to your website, go on the Discords, find out all this stuff, and start partaking in the network as we speak?
So the short answer is yes. The slightly longer answer is that at the moment, Accurist has launched a canary net, which is kind of a incentivized test net, if you want. And this canary net is where people are onboarding all of this compute. We're planning the main net to be launched in Q4 of this year, actually. Wow. We will, however, also keep the canary net up and running. And the idea behind that is that we are having a lot of iterations over the protocol, with a lot of nice new features being added, a lot of optimizations. Because when we started, we had a couple of hundred devices onboarded. And then when we started then to kind of promote this and show also people how easy it was to onboard devices, it caught on like wildfire, because mouth to mouth was very powerful, or it still is very powerful in this case. Especially, we amplified that as well with the rebellion program that we will touch on maybe later on. But yeah, now there's a couple of thousand devices that are already on the network, doing and providing their resources. And we have a growth of about, sometimes even 500 devices per day that are just being onboarded onto the network. This is all still testnet, canary net phase. So super exciting. And we're super excited to see then how this will play out for the actual mainnet. People are also, of course, getting very excited about that in the social channels and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a real appeal to people being able to get cryptocurrencies without actually having to buy them. Okay, you're contributing in a different kind of way, but I think this appeals to a hell of a lot of people. And I know there's going to be a lot of people out there that are going to want to know a hell of a lot more about Accurast. And that's really what I want to come on to is, where should we send them? So we're going to leave links to the Accurast website, Twitter, social media is a big thing, obviously the Discord and the Telegram. Where else, where's the main place, where's the best place for people to go and find out more about Accurast and kind of what it's doing and get involved?
The main website definitely is the best place to start, because you have like everything put together there for both user groups, right? Whether you're a developer or a person that wants to provide compute and participate in that way, both visions are kind of covered on the website. After that, you know a little bit more about Accurast and so on and so forth, I think the Accurast console is one of the tools that is being used daily by people to monitor their processors, adapt settings on their processors, upgrade their processors. And then, of course, the communities are very, very active to be helping everyone, and also to get to know the latest news on the protocol. It's very, very actively developed. We just had a new protocol upgrade today. And the main reasons why we're having all these kind of protocol upgrades is that we were not expecting that much take on, like more and more people onboarding on the platform. But since we launched the Rebellion program, which is something that we launched a couple of weeks ago, it's a loyalty program where everybody is open to participate, and there is a nice referral system for everyone. But since we launched that, that really had a huge boost on the onboardings of new devices.
Yeah, we're going to leave a link to the Rebellion program in the description. Get on board, guys. If you've got an old mobile phone, if you've got, you know, three or four of them like I have, what's the harm in sort of putting them towards the network? I think for me, this is something I want to take part in for a number of reasons, not only for the rewards and the kind of utilization of what is to me at the moment a device that's doing nothing. I'm in some ways, I guess, contributing towards saving the planet throughout chucking these mobile phones out and actually upcycling them. But also, fundamental to the core of Web3, I'm all about the power of decentralization and to democratize what is currently really a dictatorship in regards to the current infrastructure that runs the internet. When people think about the internet, they think of this thing that lives in the ethos somewhere, but actually, it's a coalition between hardware and software. And unfortunately, we've given a lot of that hardware, and fortunately in many cases, because it's brought benefits to all of our lives, I think. We've given that over to a handful of companies, and they have huge power as a result of it. So this kind of more philosophical idea of taking back power, empowering people, and the fact that you can do that all for a mobile phone for me is genius. And that number of 20 million phones, it might be more, it might be less. We'll see where we're at when we get to that. It's something that I'm actively going to try and contribute and work towards. And I'd encourage other people to do the same. Of course, go and do your own research. We're going to leave the links to absolutely everything in the description. I don't know, Alessandro, if you want to plug your socials before I love and leave you.
Yeah, I mean, you can also follow me on Twitter. I'm sort of active there. If I'm not focused on working on other things, Accurist, of course, always. But the Accurist socials are definitely the best place to have all of the updates around Accurist.
Yeah. The last thing for me to do is thank you very much for coming on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I really do hope that we can do this again sometime soon. So thank you very much for coming on. Hope to see you soon.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for the opportunity. And I also enjoyed it a lot. Thanks.
Thank you.